What's going on, Orlando City fans? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Rushnell, and today we will be reviewing the 1-0 win over Montreal last night that put us into the quarterfinals against one of Seattle, or LAFC. Massive win last night. Before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Cappy's Subs. You can order over the phone at 407-647-9099 or online at cappyssubsfl.com, all one word. And Adam, where are they located?
501 North Orlando Avenue, Maitland, Florida, not Winter Park. Make sure you get the city right.
Make sure you get the damn city right. Make sure to leave a 5-star review as well. We will be reading them out on the podcast. And with that, Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
No, I'm pretty good. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Chase, how about yourself?
Good. I'm pleased to be in the quarterfinals. Feeling good.
Yeah. And Adam?
Doing all right. Let's talk some city.
All right. So usually I would start with the lineup. You know, we go through the game really quickly before talking about and analyzing the match. But lineup was pretty expected. Absolutely no switches. Not much to talk about there. So let's talk about the Tesho offsides call that was, well, incorrect, in my opinion, after a second and a third look at it. At first, I thought it was offsides, but after, you know, pausing it and like looking at it really deeply, it looks like the defender's butt keeps Tesho onside. Because at first I was looking at the foot and I'm like, yeah, Tesho's off because the dude's foot is there. But then you look and he's leaning back and his butt keeps him onside. Are we all in agreement that it is, or it should have been called onside?
That booty though.
I think we can start with that. We can all say we agree on that it was onside. But do you think it's enough to overturn a clear and obvious error on the ref's part? Chase, go ahead.
They've talked about it all night, how you're supposed to defer to the attacker and keep your flag down and then go to VAR if necessary. So, like, I mean, that's not necessarily a rule, but that's kind of what referees are encouraged to do. So it was kind of an interesting call and such a tight play for the referee to put his flag up. I just thought that was weird. Because, like, we've seen it in the league a couple times on a few different occasions. And like, they've just talked about it before that, like, you know, if the player's in behind, even, like, I've even seen it where it's, like, a clear offside, they'll still keep the flag down and just defer to VAR if necessary.
Well, I believe early in this game, Tesho was clearly offsides. Mueller held onto the ball too long, and instead of shooting, tries to play a nifty through ball to Tesho. And then the flag doesn't go up, I believe. And then he puts it in the back of the net. Obviously, it was like 2 yards offsides. It was clear that he was off, but the ref doesn't blow the whistle. He allows the play to go just in case something happens. So it's kind of frustrating that here, in one of the tightest offsides calls you'll see, he raises the flag when he can't. There's no way he can be 100% sure there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen someone on Twitter, I'm looking for it right now, where he has like a similar, he's access somehow to a similar technology of like what they use in the Premier League, which, you know, a lot of people have different opinions on that. And like, it's the one where it has like the red and the blue line and it'll go to their farthest point, like where the defender is versus where the attacker is. And Tesho was, well, according to this random dude on Twitter, so trust him if you must, but according to his technology, like Tesho was onside. And like we said, it's like you got to defer right there. I feel like it was a questionable call for sure.
And I think it goes against the spirit of the rule too. Like, the offside is basically so you can't sit in the box and cherry pick. Tesho was obviously making an effort to keep himself onside, and he wasn't even the one getting in behind. That was Mendez. He was just sitting on the line and playing the pass. I think there's no reason to raise that flag there with how the refs are taught to do it. And also it just going against the spirit of the rule. There's zero reason that should have been called real time offside.
All right. Well, luckily we were not affected too much by it. Maybe the scoreline could have been different, but we still did get through the quarterfinals. Let's talk about our goal now. Tesho Akindele putting the ball in the back of the net. after some defensive miscues from Fani and Diop, not getting a strong hand to it. Daniel, what were your initial thoughts on the goal?
I think it's... I mean, I was really happy for Akindele. I know it's like just a tap-in, but he's obviously always under some scrutiny, I think. And, you know, he again, is come in when needed. It was a decent passing move up until they got sort of outside the penalty area and we needed a little bit of help from the defence. I always said, especially last week, that this was going to be a one-goal game. And to be honest, to be fair, Montreal, as poor as they are, kind of collectively in a, as a unit going forward, they're actually very good defensively, I thought. And I thought their keeper was actually playing a really good game as well. So the movement was nice. I'm actually just watching another replay as I speak. But I see, you know, Pereira again was involved pretty cutely to the edge of the box. And then Mendes making himself a nuisance. Akindele just being in the right spot at the right time. And, you know, they say it with strikers that, you know, he's not banging it in from 30 yards, but he's in the right place at the right time. And that's all you need to do.
Yeah, now that's basically the game. So let's kind of transition here to somebody you brought up, and that is Mendes. I want to have a debate about him. I don't know if all of
you
will.
I know you've been waiting for this, Gavin. You've been like, I mean, you've
itching
been an
to go.
And you've been screaming in your bed all night waiting for this. So.
It's just after looking at it, because I rewatched the game today, and I really watched him. I feel like I might have been a little too harsh than what I was saying last night, but I still do kind of stand by what I was saying a little bit. Basically, I put out something on Twitter. I said Mendes is an offensive liability because we did see a lot of attacks go through him and just end or fail and chances not get created. I mean, there was one instance where he has the ball and Yuri Rossell's behind him, and Rossell tells him man on, and he just falls over himself. Like, I think he freaks out after being told man on. There's somebody sprinting on him, and he just falls. He just panics. And so it's little things that is frustrating like that. Some of the shots, you know, they're difficult. One of them pops up on him. One of them's a very hard angle to shoot at. It's all very, you can pick each one out that he struggles with, each chance that he struggles with. And say, yeah, that's kind of unfair to him. Yeah, that's kind of unfair to him. But sooner or later, when you have that many chances to impact the final third, you need to start, you know, taking your chances. Adam, I'm going to go to you with my first question on this one. Were you as disappointed in Mendes's performance as I was? Because I thought in the final third he was disappointing.
I don't think that's possible. No, I was not as disappointed as you were. I was tiny bit disappointed with the chances they took, but everyone who is a regular listener of this pod knows that I'm a huge Mendes fan, and I will continue to be, and I think he had a good game last night.
And I'll say I'm a fan of his too. I'm just trying to analyze his performance.
Yes,
someone said to me I had an agenda. No, I do like Mendes. I'm just trying to look at what he did last night.
Yeah, and so we had a bit of an offline conversation about this where I think a point that was made and agreed upon that if we're looking to a defensive midfielder to provide the focal point of our offense, like Mendes was at points last night, I think we're in trouble. And to me, it's likened to Higuita when at times when Higuita was the only bright spot, because obviously, our offense did struggle last night. We only put up one on Montreal, and Montreal's not good. But I liken it a bit to when Higuita would do all the combination play, and he would get himself in good positions, and then he would shoot, and it wouldn't be on target because Higuita's a defensive midfielder, and he doesn't do shooting drills as often as strikers. You know, he's just not used to being in those positions. And Mendes did a little bit of the same thing. I thought his one-touch passing was very good. I thought that when he didn't have to think too much and he was very instinctive about it, then his positioning was very good. His combinations were very good. He found himself in great offensive positions. And obviously he should have had a goal because that was the one that was called offside. And so I think if that's not called offside and that goal counts, we're talking about Sebas Mendes man of the match because he would have scored the only goal that that actually took some doing rather than Tesho's poach. And so I think it's a little unfair to Mendes to say that he had a bad game or a little bit of a disappointing game because he didn't put the ball in the net, because that's really what was lacking. Like, sure, in the final third, like the Uri man on instance that you brought up, like, he might have been a little bit lost, but I think overall he looked really good up until it was time to shoot.
It's a double-edged sword for me because, yes, he's not supposed to be that man. Ursa is supposed to be the one doing that. But then when he, you know, that's not his game. But then
Ursa hasn't scored for us either, though. Do you think, given, because we haven't seen Ursa have that many chances in game, do you think given those same chances, Ursa is putting two or three in? Because I don't think
so. We actually have that exact question. And I think Ursa at least puts the shot that Mendes fires over the bar on target. And then the one where the ball, I think it's Juan, crosses it and Diop saves the cross and it falls to Mendes, it doesn't go under Urso's foot. I'm not saying Urso scores. I'm saying he at least does better in those chances. But what I was going to say is it's a double-edged sword because, yes, Mendes has grown up being a more defensive-minded player in the professional game. But then he's asked to do the Aaron Ramsey role at Arsenal. So he was making late runs that Montreal just couldn't deal with. I don't remember which one of you said it, but it might have been Chase where you said that we could, with passing and interplay in the midfield, we could get some real opportunities, not only on the right side, but making late runs in the midfield. That's exactly what he was doing. If you watch Arsenal, Aaron Ramsey always used to make those late runs into the box, and Aaron Ramsey is probably the best player in the world at making those runs and actually finishing them from a midfield position. But Mendes is not that player. Urso, I think that's the game plan for Urso. So, Chase, were you a little disappointed that... It's hard, right? Because were you disappointed that Oscar asked Mendes to do something that he's not 100% capable of doing?
I don't really know, because we don't have like a like for like swap of Urso, and obviously he was down for injury. You know, I thought Mendes was fine. I think he's really good in like tight spaces, and especially with Mauricio, like they're good at playing kind of like 1-2s, I guess, with each other. But yeah, like Adam was saying, it's just, that's not really his strong suit. Like, I don't believe he scored a goal last year, and he's never really been that type of player. Like, he's not strictly a defensive midfielder, you know, like that's not his only quality. Obviously not that any of you guys are saying that, but he is very good with the ball at his feet and spreading it out and quick interplay and things like that. But he's just never had an end product. And also I kind of liked what Adam was saying where, and like I had this thought too when I was rewatching the game, you know, if that goal isn't called offside, I think we're having a completely different discussion here, just because, you know, that's just kind of the nature of anything, of punditry, of being a fan of soccer, of just anything in that nature. Like, one goal can make a player's awful performance that can completely change your mind about it. And on my first watch of the game, I definitely thought that maybe he had given the ball away a few times and, like, you know, kind of made things harder than they had to be. And as well as, you know, he had maybe like three clear chances where he probably should have at least troubled the keeper, but he didn't necessarily. But then again, it kind of falls to the idea that that's just never been his game. You know, if we look at it as an isolated performance of a player that's supposed to be his role, he maybe was lacking in a couple areas. But if we put a little context to it and we understand who Mendes is as a player, and, you know, his well-known weaknesses in the game and his strong points in the game, I think that he played up to his strengths, and his weaknesses were a little more exposed because of his role.
Yeah, I think you actually just worded it perfectly for me. The fact that if I'm looking at it without context, just analyzing the player, it wasn't good enough. But then you look at it, he's a defensive midfielder. Daniel put something in the group chat last night when we were kind of debating about it, and he said if we put Dom Dwyer, I'm going to steal his thunder here, if we put Dom Dwyer at left back, does that mean we should expect him to be really good on defense? No. I think that's a great point that Daniel made. I'm not going to 100% say it's mine, but yeah, so I think that's just where I fall between. So I think last night while I was watching the game, I was, you know, looking at it without context. Now that I think about it, talk to you guys about it, it's more Mendez did good enough. I mean, and to be fair, on our goal, Mendez does really good as well. You know, he passes the ball into Pereira. He makes the run forward. The overlapping run, Nani puts the ball in the area. He pressures the defender. Fani makes the mistake, and we get the goal. So it's not like he was 100% useless. So I guess I should say I'm not as down on his performance as I was before. All right, now I want to have
one
a little
more thing. One more thing. It is worth noting that Sebas Mendez is 22 years old and Junior Oso is 31 years old. One has had an entire career of high-level play behind him to draw experience on in the final third, particularly, because experience really shows up in the final third. That's I think, where players can improve dramatically over career. And Sebas just doesn't have that yet. And so the more he finds himself in those situations and figures out what to do, I think we'll see him get two or three goals a season on those late runs, maybe even five. Who knows in the future? But we sometimes forget that Sebas is as young as he is because he's so damn good for his age.
I think that's a great point, and I'm actually glad you bring up experience because that's kind of where I was going next. We have finally seen Daryl Dike in action, something that we didn't actually expect to see this tournament. So I figured, why not analyze his performance? Let's talk about the new boy that we've brought in. Daniel, bird's eye view, how did you rate DK's performance?
DK gave as much as you could expect from a rookie making his first appearance. I mean, he was enthusiastic. He was he looked physically strong. I mean, we can't expect much from him. He's obviously a young guy. He's just coming straight into the game, and I thought he imposed himself in the box, but he's going to have to obviously get more minutes, you know, get comfortable and such. You know, I feel as if he did look promising, though. I mean, the thing I did like about him the most was that he just had some energy up there, which we always hear that, you know, attack are sometimes the best form of defence, and I feel like he could be a candidate, possibly, you know, in a pressing sort of formation or system. You know, you think with him and people like Benjamin Shaw, we could have a good sort of explosive forward line that can hassle defenders as well as have some ability on the ball. So I was pretty happy with him. I mean, I didn't see much that says we need to start him in the next game, and I'm not going to go all jilted lover on him like you did with Mendez either. I think he had promise, but he's obviously very raw.
Yeah. Again, this is something that we were talking about last night in the group chat, and basically the consensus was he has the raw talent to be amazing. We just need to kind of mold the clay, and I think he needs to work on technique and decision making. Because yeah, he had that one good dribble in his first touch ever in professional play, and it was great. But after that, some of his dribbling, it didn't look like he had full control of the ball. And then decision making, he had a layoff to Mueller he could have made that could have possibly ended in a goal, depending on how Mueller's strike went or how that play ended up. Then Montreal give him the ball in a very dangerous position. He has Nani running to his left, and we all understand that he is eager to make an instant impact, get a goal on his debut, and that's probably what played into it. But he takes 3, 4, 5, 6 touches when he should have played Nani in, and that would have sealed the deal for the game with a few minutes left to go. So that was a little frustrating, but overall, I was pretty positive about his performance, and oh my gosh, we already knew he was a beast, but that guy is huge. I mean, at one point, he gets fouled from behind. The defender hits him straight on the shins, slide tackle in the box. He doesn't even feel it. He just keeps running through it. And then on the one where he's running in the box and he bypasses a player and uses his arms to kind of get around him, throws him to the ground, clearly a foul. I mean, he is a big guy, so I was pretty happy with his first performance.
Yeah, I'm not disappointed at all with him. I think that he's young. He has no chemistry with the other players. It's the first time he's ever played with them. So I don't expect much at all. I mean, some of the stuff I've read, at least, you know, people, I think, expecting far too much from him too quickly. And I also think that some people who play FIFA a lot probably think that it's just easy to have a player just get the ball and just play it out wide to someone and such. I mean, obviously it's a very different, you know, set of eyes from when you're looking at it as an observer versus where you are on the field. And I think he just needs time. I mean, he didn't disappoint me at all. I'm glad that he got a few minutes, you know, but we can't rely on him right now for much. So
I think he showed, I mean, obviously the physicality of it, but like size, speed, strength, agility, all that's there. What a piece of clay to mold. What I think he showed is that he's ready to start developing. He showed the mentality that was necessary in being energetic and using his energy to press and try to look forward. And he tried as hard as he could to contribute a goal in some way. It just wasn't there for him because he just didn't have the experience to draw on to know what to do. But I think he made a very good case for himself to always be on the bench and not make an appearance every game, but be on the bench every game in case the opportunity comes up that Pareja can give him 10, 15 minutes, like at the end of this game, because Montreal at no point looked even remotely threatening, in my opinion. Like, they had a good, like, two okay chances that they almost stumbled into, but, like, DK on for Tesho wasn't going to change any of that. And so a game like this where we're shutting it down and we just need someone to like kind of cause a little havoc and run out 10, 15 minutes, I think that he's shown he's ready for that just to get him comfortable in the professional game.
Adam, you're doing really great with the transitions tonight, because I was also going somewhere very similar in that Pareja, I think, got the subs exactly right. You know, we've said it on the podcast before, you don't put in these young players in games where you expect them to win you the match at a 1-1 draw. You put them in a match where you're comfortable and they can go out there and do a quick job for you, 15, 20 minutes left even. He came in, the 70th minute, something like that. He didn't come in with 35 minutes to go and we're holding a slim 1-0 lead and we're backs to the wall. He came in, we're confident, we're doing great, and we end up going out winning that match, and we probably should have scored another goal with him on the field.
Absolutely. And I don't want to leave Joey Desart out here. Obviously DK gets the headlines, quote unquote, because he's a striker and he was the first round pick and everything. Joey Desart, I thought didn't look out of place, and he was on he came in at the same time as DK, I think, didn't he? Maybe
it was a little bit later. Pareja came on.
Pareja came on. But Desart came on with, I think 10 minutes left of like regular time and like 6 minutes of added time. So Desart got a few minutes too. And I thought that he acquitted himself well. And Oscar Pareja gave them a shout out in his post-match interview. It's really good to see. And we knew that Pareja was this kind of coach, but it's amazing to see a coach that really believes in developing youth talent. Because that's really how a club that we're never going to outspend Atlanta, LAFC, LA Galaxy, even like Seattle or whatever. So how we're going to win is we're going to be like a Philly, like a Dallas, that we're going to develop that, you like Red Bulls, even without the money, that we're going to develop that youth talent in our system and build a team from the ground up like that. And it's great to see a coach that truly believes that.
Now, Chase, you watched Desart's performance a little bit. Do you want to touch on it really quickly?
Yeah, it was interesting because, like, Desart, in the preseason game that I watched, I believe is the one against the Icelandic team, I think that he might have started or he came on for at least the full second half or something of the sort. And I actually thought that he was, like, he looked to be a player that I wouldn't even be afraid to give minutes like right off the bat. Like he's a very technically good kind of defensive midfielder, almost more so in the mold of like Yuri than he is closer to Sebas or Urso even. And this performance was like completely fine. Like obviously like with DK, there's not going to be you can't really expect like a breakout performance in your first professional appearance. And that wasn't really what we got, obviously, but there were times when the ball was at his feet and he did well. He shifted the ball over. He played a simple pass. He didn't really lose possession that much. There are often times where, like, a little bit would go by and I didn't really notice him too well. And for a midfield, like midfielder, I almost don't think that that's really a bad reason, because they're oftentimes just kind of getting the ball and shifting it real fast. And then if they make a defensive error, that's something that would kind of stand out. But then there are also times where, like, kind of at the end of the game, he had the ball in the corner and there were like four defenders around him. And I can't even necessarily describe what he did, but he just did some, just he used his body well to hold up the ball and waste a little bit of time and win a corner in the corner of the field. And that's, you know, that shows a decent mentality as well on the mental side of the game. It's he didn't just try to get the ball and go directly on goal. He was smart enough to just hold it up a little bit and then win a corner and you know, get the victory. And that's, you know, professionalism is something that maybe if you look at DK's performance, it was a little bit lacking. Like, I thought DK technically was okay. But there were times where maybe he hit his back to goal and he had some simple passes that he could have made and allowed the play to continue. But maybe he decided to turn and try to play the ball at field or something like that, and it wasn't the right decision. But for Dzar, I thought it was just a professional performance. And I wasn't blown out of the water, but I was fairly impressed. And, you know, I certainly don't think that it's a performance that's going to see him, you know, drop to the reserves. I think that we could see him again in the very near future.
Yep. Now, Daniel, I felt that we controlled this match 100%. We were in total control. And, you know, coming in as the one seed, that's expected, but you never know with Orlando City. You never know with Montreal against us. They always seem to play us well. I felt the only time Montreal actually looked good was when we allowed them to. You know, like when we would take our foot off the gas and not press as much, I felt that the only time Montreal ever looked threatening is when we took our foot off the gas, didn't press them, and you know, they came onto us and actually tried to attack. And then the other only threatening thing was from set pieces. So you said earlier, sometimes a team's best form of defense is attack. So do you think tonight that was the case for us?
I think so. I mean, we definitely dominated the game. It reminded me in terms of style, like a cup tie, like maybe like an FA Cup tie, with a, you know, a larger team at home playing against a smaller team. And just the way, yeah, it's no disrespect to Montreal, because they've obviously played Orlando very well in the past, but in this particular game, the way Montreal was set up to play, it was kind of like just a, like a mitigation against, you know, disaster, really. Just, you know, trying to defend and maybe hope for penalties or just to get a goal on a set piece or something. And we imposed our will on the game, but we were definitely not clinical enough. I feel like the game itself is a little bit of a red herring. Like, there was one of the reporters said that it was the most significant result in the club's history, which I definitely don't agree with. I mean, it's a 1-0 win, it's a clean sheet, which is good, but Montreal did not impose themselves in the way that we've expected in the past, and that's probably because they've lost Piatti and they've not invested sufficiently. You know, so it's definitely a good game, and Orlando certainly deserved to win. Montreal just did not bring much to the table going forward, so I feel as if, yeah, it's good, but it's, I don't think Orlando needed to get really out of second or third gear either, you know? It's just one of those strange games that you get from time to time, and Orlando will probably need to be a little sharper when they play the next opponent, which is LAFC or Seattle.
I mean, we can say that Montreal was bad, but don't you think that we kind of made them, like, we forced them to be bad a little bit?
Not really, because they were just set up to defend. I mean, this is the thing, like, when you say a team is bad, I mean, how are you grading bad? Are you grading bad because they don't attack much, or are you grading bad because of how they defend? I mean, for me, a bad team is one that gets tanked 4 or 5-0. Montreal had a defensive game plan, and it very nearly paid off for them.
But we should have tanked them 3-4-0.
But Orlando is not clinical enough yet to do that. So again, it's, you know, you're right. We did maybe stop them playing, but I think even if we'd have let them play, they'd still be playing now, Montreal, and they probably wouldn't be scoring. So that's how much ambition Montreal had. That's why I said it's like a little red herring of a result, because it does look dominant. It does look like Orlando snuffed Montreal out. But I do feel that a team with a little more ambition, a lot more guile and a lot more creativity would have tested Orlando a lot more than Montreal did as well. So I'm certainly not getting excited. It's certainly not in my top 10 results ever. It's just one of those games that Orlando needed to win. They did a professional job and they move on to the next round. But I feel as if, like I said, a better team would have given us more of a, you know, more of a challenge, you know?
Yeah. Adam, how helpful do you think it was that Thierry Henry seemingly refused to start and play Maxi Arruti, somebody that we pointed out as one of their danger men in the preview podcast?
I think sometimes coaches get cute and outsmart themselves. I think Henry did that a little bit. Obviously, Arruti is an MLS veteran who knows how to score in this league, and he's proven it time and time again. And if you're setting up with a defensive game plan like he did, where you're going to try to win the match 1-0 or get like 1-1, go to penalty or something, you're going to need a guy that has the wits about him to nab a goal against the run of play, because that's how you're going to have to win that game. And so we talk about Oscar Breja being a protagonist and his team being protagonists, the language he likes to use. Henri's team was being antagonistic. And that's how they decided to approach that game. And a veteran who understands how the league works and how to get results is a great player to have on the pitch if you're an antagonist. So it really, really confused me. And by the time Arruti finally got on, it was too little too late. It really, really confused me why we didn't see him. I think maybe the only thing I can think of, unless there is like some sort of knock that we don't know about, or he had like a muscle strain or whatever, but still he came on so late. Maybe he thought, Pareja knows Arruti really well and he'll be able to neutralize him, so I'm going to go with someone else, which I would say is definitely getting too cute. You play your best players, and Arruti is one of their best players.
All right, let's get into studs and duds. Chase, I'm going to start with you. Who was your stud from the last match?
I'm probably going to go with Teshua Akindele, just simply because he's, you know, since Dom Dwyer has been dropped, he's been a lot more influential in the build-up play, and there's been more of a link to the midfield and the attack and the wingers to the striker than we've ever really had before, at least for the entirety of the game. Obviously, when he came on, that improved, and, you know, he definitely was extremely lucky to come away with a goal in this game. But, you know, he still did. He was in a good position, and he read the play well, and he made himself available, and he didn't give up on the play. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, that ball probably would have just been cleared or fell to the goalkeeper, and he wouldn't have gotten anything out of it. But this was the 10th time that, you know, he was alert and he was ready to charge the ball, and he did. And also, you know, he could have had an assist on the Sebas goal. So, you know, he is still a little bit of an average player. I still would like to see another striker come in, but he's definitely been an improvement over, you know, past people up top. So yeah, my stud's going to be Teshua Akindele. And then my dud, this is a game which for me, it's actually kind of hard to choose a dud. I thought maybe like Antonio Carlos did well, and we've criticized him in the past. And I thought everyone else, you know, I think we said this in the last game, it was kind of like a 7 out of 10 performance, but my dud, I'm probably going to go with João Moutinho, just because, you know, we rely on him heavily to be a good player, whipping in crosses from the left side, and I thought there's maybe 3 or 4 occasions where he tried to play a ball in, and it was overhit, and it couldn't really find the head of a man in the box, and that's probably a shining quality, so the fact that it was off target was a little disappointing to me.
Adam, studs and duds?
My stud's going to be Robin Jansen, and I think this is a kind of like when Lord of the Rings Two Towers won Best Picture at the Oscars as kind of like a recognition of the entire series. I'm going to recognize Robin Jansen as my stud really so far in this tournament, because he's been far and away the best player on that back line, fullback or center back. And I think in our episode that during... when we were just trying to put out content because of the corona vacation, if we can call it that, when we were being particularly harsh and finding ways to criticize the club, I think I said that Jansen was very up and down last season and had some highlights, but also made some mistakes that I think got overlooked because we were so thirsty for a good defender. he's been so steady so far, and I know it's only been 4 games in the tournament, but he's been rock solid in each one, and I can't really think of a glaring mistake that he's made so far in 4 games. And maybe if I reviewed the tape a little more, I'd be wrong, but like, he's been just commanding the back line. He's made influential tackles. He hasn't made any giant mistakes. His passing has been good. He's shown he can advance the ball. Actually, Carlos has done that too a little bit, but he can advance the ball and connect with the midfield. I think that Robin Jonsson has shown he can be that alpha defender that we've been missing from Orlando City teams in the past, maybe that we haven't seen since like a healthy Jonathan Spector. And my dud, I was going to go with Mutinho. I think I'm going to go with Pedro Galese. I'll go Chris Mueller, actually. So real quick on my Galese thing is I think he could have caught more than he just parried away, but whatever. I think Chris Mueller, this is the first game that I thought was actually disappointing from him. I think last game we had him as a dud, but he still had like a decent game. I think he could have made a little bit better decisions. We're talking about a little before we started recording the Nani cross that kind of found its way through and surprised him in his feet. I called out Dom Dwyer for not putting in basically the same chance against Miami. I'm going to call it Chris Mueller here. As a forward, you have to be expecting the ball, whether you think it's going to get to you or not. And you have to be ready to hit it. Tesho, in his post-game interview, said that he got his goal because he was optimistic, and that's who he has to be as a forward. Even if there are three defenders between you and the crossing player, you got to believe that somehow that ball is getting to you, and you have to be ready to hit it in if it does, because that's how you score more goals. And so I think he should have put that in. He would have had an easy goal. And also there was an opportunity where he was driving in from the left onto his favorite right foot, and he tried to put Tesho in with a late pass and ended up being offside. Instead, he could have tried to put in a curler at the far post, which is a strike we know he can hit. So I think he was a little off his game, and I would like to see him get back on that horse against LAFC or Seattle.
All right, Daniel.
Well, all my picks have been taken so far, so I'm going to readjust. I'll go with Antonio Carlos as my stud. I think he's steadily getting better. He's settling in a little bit more. And we're not talking about a mistake or a mistimed challenge or a lack of concentration from him. I think he's developing pretty well with Jonsson at the back, and it's definitely promising. I thought the defensively as a unit, they were excellent yesterday. But Antonio is starting to show a lot of solidarity, I guess, at the back. So it'd be my stud. As for my dud, I mean, it's kind of difficult to pick one. I'm not going to pick Rossell again because I picked him last week. He's just doing his job, so I should just leave him alone. But I'll go with Pereira for this, and only because he's not quite hit this. He wasn't hitting the same heights as the previous game. So nothing. He still put in a good 7 out of 10 game. Just wasn't as clinical or as incisive as we used to. Probably owing partly to the way Montreal set up. But he did also have a good opportunity in the box, which he should have certainly tested the goalkeeper with. I don't know if you remember, but I think it was Juan's pullback. And
oh yeah, I remember it.
And it was on his left foot, but I mean, he's what, 10 yards out? He snatched at it 10 feet out. I mean, even if you're not predominantly left-footed, you should have an expectation that you're going to at least test the goalkeeper or get it close to frame. So those would be my picks, but again, it's not like he had a particularly bad game. Maybe wasn't as effective in this one.
Yeah, my stud was going to be Antonio Carlos. He had 4 interceptions and 7 clearances. He was actually really good today. Both center backs were very good. So I was going to pick him as my stud. But instead, I will go with, I'll go with Yuri Rossell. He had one ball. And, you shouldn't be a stud because of one thing unless it's an amazing goal or an assist. But this pass with his left foot crossed the field to Nani. On his weak foot, it is perfectly in Nani's path. It is beautiful, and that just shows what Yuri Rossell brings to this team. It is his technique. It is his ability to spread the play, and I have been a big advocate for Yuri Rossell getting some recognition, so I'm going to give him my stud. And that was actually the Mueller chance that Adam was talking about, with how Mueller doesn't get himself set up for the ball coming through, just in case. Yuri Rossell, left-footed, perfect ball to Nani. Nani takes a perfect touch with the outside of his foot, puts in a very dangerous cross. Diop doesn't get a foot on it, and then, you know, Mueller, unfortunately, doesn't react to it. And then my dud is actually going to be Nani. These last few games, I don't know what it's been. These last two, I've just been kind of disappointed. I don't know if his head's just not there, but he doesn't look like he is playing with the same sort of intensity we're used to. It's hard because maybe that's harsh. He is playing with intensity, but sometimes he's just a little too indirect with it. Sometimes he's too passive, and I'd like him to be more direct when he gets the ball, because he's not the focal point of our attack anymore. So when he does get the ball, I'd like him to try and impact the game. And for me, he just doesn't these last two games. And he has been kind of wayward with his passing. He makes the wrong decisions sometimes, like in the Philadelphia game, shooting instead of crossing. So just based on last game and this game, his performances have been lower than usual. I'm going to go with Nani as my dud. And that's it for part one. We will do fan questions in part two right after this. All right. And we're back for your questions in part two. We got some from Twitter, one from Instagram. So let's get straight into it. At Erod3141, Adam, this one's going to go to you. How good can this team be without a first-class striker? We are creating plenty of opportunities, but not capitalizing them as much as we could.
I think that's a question that answers itself a little bit. How good can this team be without a first-class striker, or even one that's a net positive? You know, that's a little harsh to Tesho. I think he's a net positive as far as like a little bit goes, but he's obviously not a first-class striker. There's a cap on it, right? We need one. If it's really what the most glaring and obvious hole, now that we've kind of accepted that Mueller has looked the part of a more mature player who doesn't spend all his energy, which was really his problem, doesn't spend all his energy in like the first half and then is a liability in the second. We don't see that from him anymore. So I feel very confident, even though it's only these few games that we've seen it. It's such a market improvement that I feel confident that Mueller can be our starting right winger. And so striker is the only real hole left. That being said, it's a gigantic hole and it's one that needs to be filled. A striker that can create for himself, you know, can receive the ball at his feet, and where there's not an obvious chance, maybe make a turn and make something happen, or be really energetic in the press, or, you know, just finds ways to put balls in the net. And so without that, we're kind of capped at a mid-table team who can pull some upsets. We might do better in a cup format like this, because just the knockout format lends itself to more chaos and upsets. And there, it's obviously a solid defensive team, so you know you can pull out a 1-0 victory, but you're not going to get the points required to compete for a supporter shield and might get into the playoffs and cause some noise, but I think it's unlikely that you're going to lift the cup without that focal point of the offense. So there's 100% a cap on this team's potential until we get a striker.
Chase, at MLS Gone Wild, an MLS-based podcast. I really like it, so y'all should go check it out. They say, can Orlando sustain their success they've had in this tournament? And I'm not sure if they meant in the next round or after the tournament's over. So let's go with after. So do you think we can sustain our success?
sustaining our success, like, I think that we're definitely going to make the playoffs this year as 9 teams from each conference make the playoffs. So,
I didn't know this.
Am I incorrect or is that true? I believe that that's true. That's what I've heard.
That's insane.
Yeah. So we actually
don't make the playoffs.
Right here. Yeah. So, damn. I mean, oh, go ahead.
I feel like with the points we already have, we're already in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with like Cincinnati and teams like that. Cincinnati have been playing better, and even Atlanta, like they don't really look like they're gonna win too many games.
What if Atlanta was the Eastern Conference team to miss the playoffs?
Fuck it, dog. I would love that shit. But,
oh, that would be so good.
Yeah. I think the biggest improvement with us wasn't even like a player acquisition this season. It was Oscar Pereira. Like, he has a reputation of, at least in the MLS, just like not only getting the best out of his squad, but even maybe kind of squeezing a little bit more, if you know what I'm talking about. Like, he is a type of manager that can breathe like consistency into a team, and that's kind of been our biggest issue all throughout the season, or all throughout our existence in the MLS, where like we will have a hot streak here and there, but it's not necessarily sustainable, and ultimately we fall off. It's just kind of been predictable in the past, and I don't really see that happening, because there is there's almost something un-American about how we're playing. And I don't mean to like bag on like the MLS style of play that we've come to know in the past couple of years, but we play more akin to like a Central or South American team, like a team from Mexico or something like that, where we create chances ourselves. Like, we don't rely on luck. We don't rely on just like brute force and things like that. And even like players like Chris Mueller, who have taken steps up in our career, and young guys on the bench showing at least a little bit of usefulness, not necessarily players who we could rely on, but maybe just adding more depth, which is another issue on the team possibly. But yeah, just that kind of culture change, I think, is more important than, you know, Antonio Carlos or Galese coming in. And I think that's going to lead to us having some consistent form. And I think that we should at least shoot to be a top 5 team in the conference after this tournament is over, and once we're playing in our own stadium and things like that, because we do have a lot of talent here, and we have maybe the best manager in the league. Like, I don't know if that's like a controversial take, but Oscar Pereira has come in to a club that has struggled to find an identity, and he's stamped a mark on it and has us playing some very nice soccer. Like, we possess the ball well. We have ideas going forward, and that's not something we've seen before. So I think that we're definitely going to be able to be a little bit sustainable, especially more so than previous years.
I like the this best manager in the league comment. That interests me as a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I like guys like Brian Schmelzer, obviously, has been maybe the most successful manager in the league, but what Pereira is doing here is quite something.
So my mind goes to like Bob Bradley, Bruce Arena, and Matias Almeida.
So Bradley is doing a lot with a lot of money.
Yeah, he's doing exactly. A lot with a lot, but he also has the pedigree, pretty much flawless pedigree.
Yeah, he's good, but I personally think Schmelzer's better than Bradley. Not only because Seattle beat them in that game. I just think Schmelzer's just been so consistently good in MLS in the playoffs format, and he's brought good success to Seattle with a lesser team than some of the top teams out there. That I think Schmelzer's one of the best in the league, but I mean, Oscar Pereira has won Supporter Shield. I mean, it's not far off to say that he's the best in the league. And he's gone over to Mexico and got some experience over there, too. So I think that's a fair shout.
I'd say he's definitely top 5.
Yeah, I like the Matias Almeida shout.
Yeah, Almeida, I like his style of play. And also, I mean, knew it was San Jose. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And then similarly, Bruce Arena, almost single-handedly, with some help from Gustavo Bow, reviving New England Revolution.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Arena, we saw that he wasn't fantastic as an international manager, but there's just something about, like, the MLS. Like I hear, like, Jose Mourinho not being linked, but some Atlanta fans kind of wanting him to come here. And that, because he's kind of at the end of his managerial career, I almost think, yeah, just get him out of Tottenham as well. But because he's at the manager... Yeah, he's at the end of his career, so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But if he does come here, I seriously don't think that he would just come in and boss the league and make Atlanta, you know, like as good as they were under Tata or something like that, because it's just a different league. Like, I can't put my finger on it. It's very clearly of a subpar quality, but like, I talk about MLS experience sometimes, and I think that it's incredibly valuable because there's just something about it. It's just a weird league, man. Like it's something we all come to know and love. And if you understand all of the kind of differences that it has and the nuances, you can succeed. And I definitely think Oscar has that. Like Brian Schmelzer, if he went to the Premier League and was a manager of, you know, even just like a mid-table team, I think that he would struggle. And I'm not really trying to, like, I respect him. Like, he's accomplished so much in this league, but it's a whole different animal going from MLS to Europe and vice versa, or South America for that matter.
I also think it's impressive that what Pareja has done without any major improvements. I mean, Urso, Antonio Carlos, those aren't players like Zela Rayan, Pulido, Josef Martinez, players that are extremely game-changing. I mean, those are just average players. But I think we need to move on from this conversation. Pareja has impressed me in as being our head coach. Daniel, this one's for you. Dwyer is out. This is from @OC_Lion. David, he says, Dwyer is out, obviously, with the injury. Is this it for him in purple? Nani has over 300 minutes and looks fitter than men half his age. Are you guys impressed with him as I am? I think he's talking about Nani there. Let's remember how many important players we've had in the past who were constantly injured.
I think Dwyer's in a contract, yeah. So it's a two-sided coin for me, this one. I'd be very surprised if he was renewed past this year on his current terms. I mean, he's on a DP contract, making a good chunk of money that can be reinvested and certainly into an improvement. He always seems to be injured in the start of the season, or, you know, just when he starts getting some momentum, he always seems to get injured. And we've talked about it in the past. You have to wonder what the recurring, you know, cause is, because it's not just unlucky when it happens every single year. There has to be something there that's making it happen consistently. So I think this would be his last year at the club, and that the club will move on after that. But I think I mentioned to somebody online yesterday that all it takes is for Dom Dwyer to get one tap in, you know, from 6 yards out. Orlando fans will lose the shirt again, and they'll be like, oh, look, he did it in USL, now he's going to come do it in the MLS again for us. And somebody at Orlando City is going to read the social media and think, oh, the fans like this guy now again, let's give him a new contract and keep them happy. That just would not surprise me whatsoever, you know, for them to try and do that, because there's been a lot of talk that they do follow kind of what the fans are speaking about. I think that might have been one of the reasons why Dwyer was signed to begin with. So, for me, it should be his last year in purple. I mean, we have to, at some point, draw the line and just move on, reinvest the money and get what the team needs. But there's always a part of me that feels, nah, they're not going to, they're going to try and keep him at least for another year on some sort of agreement.
So. That's a very old Orlando City front office, though. You think Muzy is going to re-sign him when he doesn't deserve it, because the fans will be kept happy?
I don't think.
I mean, they fired JOC when a lot of fans were not happy over it, and we have seen success.
I don't know. I think one decision doesn't change a pattern. Not yet, it doesn't. I mean, if they go through this season with good sound strategy and decent recruitment, then yeah, I mean, I would be happy to change my opinion on it. But right now, I cannot honestly say to you that I trust that same pattern of decision making will continue. And right now, we're in a kind of a funny little, you know, like scenario, I guess, with the COVID and the tournament, and, you know, you're not looking at attendances and half empty stadiums and such. But I feel like in the past, when they've seen those numbers dwindling in regular season conditions, and then you get a big name player or a popular player that comes, I think that those decisions have driven the club to make some of the choices that they've made, and they've not worked out for the most part. So if they make good, sound, soccer-based decisions, then I'll be happy to trust them with it. I think Luis Mutsu will certainly make those types of decisions, but I just don't know if he has that full autonomy And that, again, is another debate for another time, and time will tell as to what the actual answer will be.
Chase, this one's for you, at 407HB on Instagram, sticking with the Dom discussion, says, are we better without Dom? I'm really quickly going to say, I think we just play a different style without him, but are we better without him?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that we are. I feel kind of bad that, you know, we always kind of bring him down, because I'm slightly like how the majority of the fans feel, where I kind of like romanticize the idea of him having a comeback, even though kind of my gut tells me that that's not going to happen, or my head rather tells me that that's not going to happen. But he's such a limited player now, and it stings to say, because he was not only good with us in USL, but he was previously a very good striker in the MLS. Even his first year, he was pretty decent with us, and in SKC he was an all-star. He was an all-star with us for 1 year, but him being on the field, I think, limits our ability to play through a striker, and even more so than goal scoring, which Tesho has been decent with. I think Tesho, that's one of the more valuable things that he provides, and it's not even necessarily anything special, but he just has the ability to come a little bit and get the ball from the midfielders and then shift it out wide to Nani, to Mueller, to Juan, to whoever is over there, and keep the play going. So, like, he's not even, like, the most dynamic striker in the world, but he's just decent. Like, that's really, like, the word that comes to mind for me. And Dom, you know, we talked about it, like, anytime the ball would come into his feet, he would try to draw a foul. Like, he wouldn't really be interested in playing the ball, or he himself would commit a foul, and it would just kind of slow the game down. And, you know, he would kill a lot of our attacks. And, you know, for me, it kind of sucks to say, because, you know, I went to a couple games before we were in the MLS, and, you know, Dom was the star man of the show, but that's just not the case anymore, and we're a better team with Tesho there. I mean, I don't want to say that we're better with DK or Patino or anybody like that, like, but, yeah, even if Dwyer was fit, I still wouldn't really want him starting, and I wouldn't necessarily want him to be a guaranteed sub or anything like that.
All right, at S. Ritzner, sorry if I butchered that, says, what do you do with the starting lineup next round? So I'm just going to answer this one really quickly. I think we would all say we keep it the same. Just keep it exactly the same. If Urso's still injured, you keep him out. Actually, Adam, I'll go to you on this one. If Urso's still injured, would you rather start Mendez or Urso? If Urso is not injured, would you start Urso or Mendez?
I think Urso, and that pains me because I have a man crush on Sebas Mendez. But, you know, I think Oscar Pereja doesn't like rotating for the sake of rotation. I'm not convinced that if Dom Dwyer were healthy that he wouldn't be starting. So, I think Urso would start if he was healthy, just because that's kind of the preferred lineup that we've seen so far. And I think Urso is a little more comfortable in that advanced role that we've seen that Pereja wants from that right side midfielder, or at least the non-Uri midfielder. So I think Urso will start if he's healthy. To be a total scratch and then start a week later, I think is a little much to ask of a 31-year-old midfielder. So I think we'll still see Mendez. If it's a question and Urso is just like trying to get fitness back, I think you start Mendez and then you sub Urso in if you think you need him.
All right. At Spizzo TFL says, how many goals does Urso score if he's playing instead of Mendez? I'm pretty sure, Adam, you asked me this exact same question, and I basically said I think he at least puts two more shots on target. I don't know if he scores them, so I'll just say zero because the goalkeeper probably would have made a save. But I think he at least does better with the chances that he was given.
I don't think it's a guarantee.
It's never a guarantee.
He's not a striker, you know. Right. If we're relying on midfielders for goals, we're doing it the wrong way.
He also, in the game that he got injured, like, he had a really good 15 minutes, but he also had like two shots kind of around like the top of the area that one I know for sure he didn't manage to put on frame. I can't remember if he troubled the keeper at all with the other one, but like I haven't seen too much out of Urso, at least in his time in Orlando, that would make me believe that he is an imminent goal threat. Like, he could pop up with one, but you know, he's not that type of player either, I don't believe.
Daniel at S. Reitzner again says, should we focus our attacks down the right side to attack the final third? This was going off the fact that most of our successful attacks in the Montreal game did come down the right-hand side.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree with that. I think it's asking too much of Moutinho and Nani if you're focusing on the left. Just because if you lose the possession on that side, I mean, Moutinho, you know, we felt, I think, collectively that he's a little bit suspect, you know, if it gets into any two-on-one scenarios. And, you know, sorry, in a defensive aspect, I mean, if he's got two-on-one against him, and we know Nani's not the best at tracking back, if we can get everything down that right-hand side, I feel like not only are we combining Pereira, Mueller and Juan, who gets right on the overlap, but you're also dragging the other opposition to that side of the field, and you're opening up space for Nani to get into the box and for Moutinho to get room, you know, to get a cross in there if we can get the switch cross ball over to him quickly enough. So, yeah, I'd say that's a very good strategy. I would probably do that if I was making the choice.
Do you worry that we might become a bit one-dimensional in that aspect, that teams can just say to their left side fullback, hey, just drop a little bit and don't advance as much. See if you can cut off Juan and Mueller and force them to play more centrally or up the left side. Do you worry that if we focus our attack on the right intentionally and maybe not like the kind of more passing shifting style that we've favored so far, that could especially play into the hands of someone like LAFC, who might be a little suspect defensively, and if they're given an easy out, they could hurt us.
That's what Montreal did, though. They sat their left back, and our overload just totally destroyed them because their left winger, I think it was Kyoto in this game, didn't come back and help.
I'm not saying don't use it. I'm just saying I wouldn't pick a side, you know. I would kind of just say, like, especially in the first 20 minutes, press, feel the game out, see where their weak points are and attack that, not necessarily say, okay, first 20 minutes, we're going Juan and Mueller. I think that's a little short-sighted to me.
No, yeah, I don't think we should do that. I think we should absolutely be kind of like a three-headed horse, being able to go through the middle, being able to go on the right and down the left. Just maybe we should go down that side a little bit more, because it does seem to work. Juan's 1-2s are amazing. He's so good at the 1-2.
No one can match his pace.
Yeah.
And he has very good, I've seen he takes very good angles with his first touch to beat a defender. Y'all notice that?
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that. He tends to take a guy away without, you know, before he's even moved.
Yeah, like you see him like approach the ball and they're about even. You're like, oh, what's he gonna do here? Is he gonna catch him? And then he'll take a sharper angle than you think, and he'll just barely cut the guy off, and then he'll be free to then unfortunately sometimes mess up the cross. But he'll be in a really good position.
Well, that's the thing with him though, is that if he could get sort of 10 to 15 goal contributions, like either a couple goals and a load of assists a season, I mean, he's automatically a player that, you know, becomes worth millions, and clubs all over the place will be looking at him.
Absolutely.
You know, that's all he lacks. Everything else he has down to a T. And I get your point, Adam, about the about teams would certainly exploit that right-hand side and plan for it. But I'm a firm believer as well that, you know, as opposed to, you know, trying to outfox the other team all the time, I feel like you should always concentrate on trying to just become extremely good at your game plan, that it will work sort of 90% of the time. And I feel like we have more potential on that side of the field to do that than we do on the left. Unless we go off and sign, you know, somebody else, you know, on a DP contract that can kind of change that way of thinking. With this current group of players right now, that would be my strategy. Doesn't mean I would keep it forever, but I would say my strategy right now would be to go down that side. We'd certainly look much better on that way.
I think we look better on the right a little bit because Pereira is definitely right side dominant. Like, he played basically right mid at Krasnodar, which is why I think and obviously this is pretty middling to low on the priority list for what we want our striker to be if we do end up spending big money on one this offseason. But I'd like a left-footed guy. Just to kind of balance out that attack a little bit, because sometimes you'll get Pereira drifting right, and it'll be and also usually the right-sided midfielder is the one that's pushing up higher. So if we could get a left-footed striker that drifts left a little bit to give Nani and Moutinho some more support, I think that could balance out our attack really well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that idea as well.
All right, next question comes from my co-host, actually, from the MLS Now podcast, Manny. At EmanVasquez10 says, who's your man of the match? Chase, it's your turn. Who's your man of the match?
I'm probably going to go with my stud, Tesho Akindele, just honestly simply because he had the goal. And I thought we played well and we controlled the ball and we created most of the chances. And Mauricio had a good game, but he also was kind of lacking a bit of quality there. And, you know, Tesho played a part in our control and kind of stranglehold in the game. And ultimately, he was the man that picked up the goal. And, I probably would just go to Tesho more so because nobody is necessarily claiming it for me, unless, you know, we wanted to go with Robin Jansen, who had a very good game as well. But, you know, I would go with Tesho. I'm actually going to, like, open this up to y'all. Do you guys think that we should go with one of our center backs or somebody else or Tesho? Or...
I think Jansen. I think especially a clean sheet shutout. And a defender, that's a great time to give a defender some recognition. So I'd say Jansen both cumulatively for the tournament, and he just did have a great match.
I honestly think Carlos had a better match than Jansen. Not because Jansen was bad, but Carlos just seemed more active in the match. Adam?
What? Oh, I thought Daniel was going to pop in.
I was waiting for someone else.
That's stunned silence.
That's great. You got me there, Gavin. I think you could make a case for either Jansen or Carlos. I think Jansen's case really lies in that he's the vocal leader of the back line, and he's making the calls and setting where it should be. If we're giving it to a center back for like the whole defensive performance, I think it's Jansen. For maybe an individual having a really good game, it's Carlos.
All right. Chase, I'm going to stick with you. Same person asking the question. What can be improved upon?
Just broadly in the game. I mean, the thing that screams out to me is simply just finishing. Like, That's kind of become like a real issue that we want to look at in the past two games, where we have been the team that created the most chances and quality chances as well, and we weren't able to put them away. Like, if we look at this game, you know, if without looking at the scoreline, we put in a performance that maybe could have seen us overpower a much lesser team and come away at 3-0, 4-0 victors, but we only walked away 1-0 winners, and that wasn't... Like we did well to create the chance. Like, it was a good flick on by Nani. It put the defender in an awkward position, and you know, the goalkeeper kind of came out, and I didn't really know why he was doing that. But it was a hefty dosage of luck that came in with our goal, and that was our only chance that we put away. So you know, who knows what would have happened? Say we you know, Montreal succeed in what looked to be their game plan, and they fall to penalties. We could be out of this tournament. So we just have to start taking our chances more, whether it's Mauricio, whether it's Sebas or Junior or somebody like that, or even Chris. That's the glaring issue to me. We were the better team clearly, but had we not been gifted a goal, I don't even know what could have happened. We very easily could be out of the tournament. So that's just something that we got to work on. And, you know, definitely a team, whether it's LAFC or Seattle, if we don't take chances and we just wait for them to gift us a goal, it might never come, and we might find ourselves out of the tournament, not even because we played bad, but just because the quality was missing with the final finish. That's just something I'm a little concerned about and something that I hope to see us improve upon.
Adam, how do you see, or how did you see Montreal? Were they... What did you think of their performance?
Not great, Bob. I couldn't see an identity from what I saw of them. They didn't really create any standout chances. They had a few shots that could have gone in if Galese had made an error, but he didn't. I saw it's kind of hard analyzing this game. I mean, we got through analyzing like the run of play in like 5 minutes because Montreal didn't really offer much. They kind of sat back and they tried to win this game 0-0 on penalties is really the feeling that I got for them. And I don't really have a lot of respect for that style of play. It kind of, especially in a league like MLS where you don't have the true underdogs like you would, like say, Bournemouth playing Man City. Like, yeah, I get that. But it's Montreal and Orlando, and it's not like Orlando is this classic heavyweight in the league. And so, you know, I really didn't take a lot from Montreal's performance because I don't think they gave a lot. They're decent in defense, but they also gave up chances and yeah, nothing special there in my opinion.
All right, Daniel, how would you feel facing either Seattle or LAFC? What are the pros and cons of each matchup? And would you be satisfied with the quarterfinal exit? And that is all the questions from my co-host, Manny.
I don't think you should ever be satisfied with an exit. You know what I mean? It's a one-off game. It's a cup tie, effectively. So you have to go out and put your best foot forward and try and win. For me, it's the manner of the performance. If we do a Montreal against LAFC and show no ambition to score, then of course you're going to be livid if you lose. And you'll probably be, I don't know, you'll be happy if you win, but you'll know deep down that, you know, you didn't play that well. So I would say that, to answer that first question, no, I would not be happy with going out of the quarterfinals. Secondly, if I was to pick one of the two, I would probably want to play LAFC because I know that they're going to be expansive. They're going to be open. I think that defensively we're pretty sound. I would be comfortable, you know, I'd be confident, reasonably confident that we would score. We would certainly score goals. I'd maybe look at possibly changing Mueller for that game and maybe putting Benjamin Schell in and try and exploit the space that LA will leave behind as they come forward. Seattle, I think, are just a very good, well-drilled team. I think whatever circumstances they're in, whatever lineup they put out, they're going to have a very good game plan. And their coach, Schmetzer, I think he's a very good coach. I didn't get to weigh in on that best coach conversation, but he's certainly in the top two or three for sure. And he's earned it on merit. He's very successful. So I'd go with LAFC. I think they look vulnerable right now. I'd be happy playing against them, and I would expect Orlando to score and probably, you know, I would at least, you know, think we're in with a chance of winning. I don't know if we can say that I'd expect them to win, but I think it'd be a good open game.
And Chase, final question at MLS Gone Wild. Again, thoughts on MLS's plan to return to play in August?
I'm obviously happy that our team is going to have 18 games and we're going to get to play out the season and have as much of a proper season as we could have. But, you know, there's always questions of if they have team like fans return, like what the impact that is going to be with the virus. And I something that we can look to is, you know, USL, like they've opened their stadium up to fans. Louisville especially, they look to have, I mean, I don't know. It looks like maybe it's like 1,000 or something like that, or maybe it's just 500 or something in that aspect. And I think that's probably what we're going to expect. It's going to be very minimum availability for tickets, if there even is tickets at all. Or have they said that at all? Like if they're going to have fans able to come to the game?
I think it's per club. Really? I think Mercedes-Benz is doing it, and then maybe the Seattle Stadium, but I think it's per club.
Yeah, I mean, I just with all, you know, baseball is kicking off and, you know, football is still looking like it's going to start. I think that they had to come back or that could set them either even farther behind of like the major four sports. And, you know, they had a good idea with the bubble. Like that was something that I was kind of like criticizing heavily and it turned out to do well. So leaving it to teams, though, is highly questionable to me. And this is, you know, far from a soccer question. This is more so like how are teams going to handle this and what impact would it have externally with the coronavirus and things like that. You know, I'm excited to see my team play. And I don't know. I'm still just very like wary of having, you know, mass gatherings of people, even if it is just like 500 individuals. But I don't know. That's just me. How do you guys how y'all feel about this?
we've seen it work in Europe. Whether we can do a similar have a similar success story here in America, I'm not so sure. I feel like somebody will come down with the coronavirus somewhere.
Yeah. Especially I mean, for,
like the travel involved too.
Yeah, it's not like we all have. They're doing charter planes. Yeah. Would they do charter?
Yeah, they would. That would put a lot of people at risk if they didn't. And like, I'm like a Marlins fan. Like, I'm not huge into baseball, but I know that I think Marlins have like four players who tested positive for the virus. And, you know, Miami, you know, they're in Florida like we are. And it's a state that's still struggling to deal with it. So I think that we could be one of the more riskier teams, especially if I wouldn't be surprised if we don't allow fans at all. But yeah, I just, you know, we've seen other leagues that they've done it okay. They've been all right with it, but it's still a present issue, and it takes out a lot of players and it puts a lot of people at risk. So it's questionable for sure.
So is it going to be 18? So we, everyone has, well, everyone except for FC Dallas and Nashville, but most teams have 5 games played so far. Is it going to be 18 total or is it 18 more?
I think it's 18 total at like post restart. Here, let me see. I got this Athletic article up. I skimmed through it before.
It would be like 23 games total per team, except for Dallas and Nashville.
Yeah, I want to say, I don't know. I saw someone say that Nashville and Dallas might play each other like a couple times just to even everything out. But
I honestly have like a 3-game series between them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that they're going to have to figure out. But
Don't look now, but Orlando City in 3rd place in the Eastern Conference, one of only 3 Eastern Conference teams with a positive goal differential. So, yeah. Like, we're discussing like where Orlando City might finish. East is wide open. I think Columbus is the obvious favorite right now to be number one in the East and be Supporter Shield contenders. Other than that, I mean, TFC and Philly and Red Bulls, if they get their act together, are the other big contenders, I think. Maybe the Revs, New York City, I guess if they'll get to play at home again, so that'll help them. But man, I could see us easily 3, 4, or 5, you know, if the cards fall right.
One thing that's always been a problem for Oscar Pereja has been fitness late in the season. But if there's another kind of extended break after this tournament, that gives the players more time to kind of rest up and then start building endurance. And then we go again. I don't think we'll see as big of a fall off in fitness as we're used to seeing in Pereja teams. Just to answer your question, I looked through the Athletic article. It would be a total of 23 games, not 18 total, 18 added on. And then FC Dallas and Nashville would play each other 3 times. But that should just about do it. If you liked what you heard, please do leave a 5-star review. Please do not hesitate to let us know your thoughts on the Montreal match. Do the survey linked in the description. And Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
BucketMan1982 on Twitter and EllenDodway82 on Instagram.
Chase?
VamosOCSC on Twitter and ChaseWCrowley on Instagram.
And Adam?
I've just received word that Chase has burned his PS4.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kosher Taco Truck.
As always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Here, Nani gets in behind. Here's Nani with a chip. It's 1-1.